what we're talking about is, you know, how could we arrive at unknown time? That's what the chapter is called. Let's see, the chapter is called Opening Unknown Time. So, you know, sometimes you can explore something that's unknown, but if you don't even know where to look, then it becomes a little bit challenging. And in a sense, that's what's going on with the situation that the chapter presents. We want to understand something about time. We begin by looking at the usual temporal order or temporal orders. And then the question is raised, well, how do those temporal orders even present themselves? You know, what is the time that presents the time of the temporal order? That's roughly where we're going to look. So I want to lay out the first part of the chapter and spend some time with it, because I do think it's challenging in some ways. And then I'm going to try to make sure that we have enough time to really go into a practice which is based on the first part of the chapter, and see how people relate to it. Because the question now that we're looking at is, how can we begin to investigate this unknown time? So it's a very practical, hands-on question. First, we need to get the view straight. We need to understand what Rinpoche means when he talks about temporal orders and about unknown time. So that's what we're going to do to begin with. So the reading, the chapter says something very interesting, which is that at the very beginning, which is that first of all, whatever arises, go to the first sentence, whatever arises in time must fit within the prevailing temporal order. But then he says, the part that strikes me as interesting, he says, the presentations of time serve a purpose given by the order of the whole. They develop in order to. So what that's saying is that whatever appears in time, and that means any kind of experience, every moment of experience, if you just tune in to your sense of what's happening right now, usually we focus, of course, on the content. We say, well, what's happening right now? What's being said here is that there's an additional dimension, that every single presentation of time, every experience in time also has, and now we're getting an echo. I don't know who that would be. Okay, let's see if we can deal with that. Okay. I think Kathleen's in the background trying to figure that out. Okay. Pretty much muted everybody at this point except me. And lo and behold, we don't have an echo anymore. Natural enough. Okay. Everything that gets presented in order to uphold the temporal order. So there's a kind of a purpose. You know, every experience we have presents itself as its own experience, but every experience also confirms and presents the order within which it arises. And that's what Rinpoche means when he says presentations of time develop in order to. And that's actually a little play on words. You know, in order to order, or in order to uphold the order, or in order to establish or confirm the order. So there's a kind of the technical term that we might use in the West is teleology, or telos, which means there's an end. The word just means end in Greek. There's something that's being served by the appearances in time. But it's not really what we think of as purpose, which is usually what telos is connected with, you know, the the universe is created in order to affirm God's will or something like that. If we were talking about purpose, we'd probably be talking, since we're talking about ordinary experience, we'd probably be talking about the self and its purposes. And that is one way that Rinpoche talks in this book and other books about how it is that ordinary linear time develops. That is, it develops in order, it develops so that the self has a place in which to appear. You know, it's the order is set up by the self as the location for the self. That would be one way of talking about purpose. What's being talked about here is a little bit different. It's a little, or you could say completely different. It's about the fact that every presentation also is confirming and establishing the order. Another way you could say that is that whatever happens has to make sense within the order. And that's actually a nice way to say it, because it has to make sense, which, you know, it has to mean something to us. But also, every event that happens is making sense out of the order within which it appears. Now, you know, we don't need to spend a lot of time on this. It's just to understand something about what is meant by a temporal order. And the point maybe to understand about that is that it's not a fact, it's not as though something first shows up and then we make sense out of it. It's that our making sense out of it is exactly the same as it's showing up. It shows up into it fits within a temporal order, which means that it makes sense to us, it has meaning, it goes along with everything else that shows up. That's an ongoing activity. You could say we're always busy going ahead with building up, making sense out of the temporal order. And the logic of that is not our usual logic, because as he says here, the temporal order, let's see if I can find that here, the temporal order as part of its job presents its own purpose. The purpose is given by the order. And that's okay. You can't hear me? Can you hear me now? Can you? Okay, well, maybe I'd gotten too, okay. Let's hope that's a temporary glitch. I'll try to move the microphone a little closer. Okay. So what I was saying was the temporal order serves its own purpose. I'm looking at the fourth line of the chapter where he says, the third line, the presentations of time serve a purpose given by the order. So the order has a purpose, but the purpose is given by the order. It doesn't stand outside. And this whole business of inside and outside is really important here, because, you know, we'll talk about that in a minute. But the point is that our experience usually arises within an order. And as long as that's true, we're stuck. And a couple of classes ago, we were looking at some of the consequences, the kind of limitations that characterize our experience. As long as we're within that order, there is no way out. There is no alternative way of knowing. And so the whole challenge, you could say, or the whole purpose here is to be able to develop a different way of knowing, which is not bound by the temporal order. And so then the question is, well, what can you do? Can you go outside the order? Can you create a new order? You know, there's various possibilities you could consider. And sure. Okay. Well, I guess I'm not sure exactly what distinction you're pointing at. You could talk about it in terms of network, or the meaning that we assign to things. But isn't that, in what sense do you see that as different from the order? Right. Okay. So I'm going to repeat that because I'm checking, and it seems to me that the recorder is not picking that up for some reason, and this has been an issue. So I'm going to, of course, shorten it a lot and perhaps distort it. Let me know if I do. You're saying that the idea of an order seems to you to have more to do with space and with knowledge, but not so much to do with time. Okay, I'm just going to leave it at that. You know, the answer is that the time arises within the temporal order, and that is part of the temporal order. And there's this funny kind of feedback, you could say. The time presents an order. You could say time presents timing in such a way that an order is established. But a part of that order is the way that time is available within the order. So you could say the order inevitably has its own time and space and knowledge. Maybe that's not, you know, maybe you're not sure that's the case, but I think that's what's being said here. Does that make sense to you? Right. So you're saying that I'm just repeating now, that in order, or when we talk about a temporal order, we can't avoid bringing in issues of space and structure and knowing. That's absolutely right. I think that we are looking at the time dimension of the vision, and they always, you know, time and space and knowledge implicate each other. They all arise together in characteristic ways. And so the characteristic of our ordinary understanding involves a certain knowledge and a certain time and a certain space. And really what Rinpoche is saying here is that there is a kind of a unifying principle. Whenever in our experience there's always this unifying principle, which is the temporal order. And you could talk about it differently. You could talk about the field of space. That would be, it's roughly parallel, I think. In this case, we're just coming at it from the point of view of time. And time does have this capacity, which is not something we usually assign to time, to establish an order within which experience unfolds, and it automatically unfolds in a space-time way in which knowledge is also implicated. So let's see, David chat writes in the chat, a melody isn't a melody until its appearance is timed in a sensible manner. Yeah, I think I understand why you make that comment, and I think that's helpful. When something appears, it's timed out. That's a term that is used in the first book especially. And its appearance depends on its being timed out. It depends on its showing up in time just as much as it depends on its showing up in space. And that's why, you know, very early on in the TSK books or in different places, Rinpoche has talked about how time and space and knowledge are interrelated. And he says, you know, it's not as though he started out with those principles, time, space, knowledge, and then built up a picture. He just said that when he was trying to understand what it is about being, about our being in the world, to use that phrase, it seemed as though you couldn't get any more basic than time and space and knowledge. And when you had one, you had to have all three. And so a melody is a great example of that, because we understand that it gets created, you could say, one note at a time. But the same thing is true if I look at my computer screen, or maybe the screen is not such a good example. If I look at my computer, it's this solid thing in space, but clearly it's also in time. There's no way for it not to be in time, or it wouldn't be here at all. And clearly there's the knowing interaction between me and what I see, the computer. Without that knowing interaction, it wouldn't be here at all. So all three are always implicated, and that is a part of what is meant when we talk about a temporal order. And you know, one of the ways Rinpoche talks about that in the beginning of this chapter, well, he calls it the tempo, first of all, but I'm not going to go into that. But he says, as the tempo, let's just say the temporal order, as it plays itself out, an order takes shape and a cosmos unfolds, right? A cosmic space and time. So the whole cosmos shows up in time, and it depends on this underlying order. And then, you know, in a little bit, he's going to start talking about the microcosm and the macrocosm. So there's the cosmos with its large structures, and then the much more particular structures that for us always have to do with our own experience, the kind of experiential dimension. And that's actually where I want to go with practice. So let's keep going with that idea in mind. The sense here is that, you know, we always find ourselves within this order. We always find ourselves at a particular present point, and we're always stuck there, you could say. And so Rinpoche is beginning to open up that possibility. First, he wants to lay out what's involved in it, and then he wants to investigate how we could move beyond it. So the laying out what's involved, is the presentation that he goes on to make here, using the example of a microcosm and a macrocosm in these two cones. But, you know, he's using this as a very simplified example, as he says at the bottom of 131. What he says is that there's not only one order, there are multiple orders. Subordinate orders is what he starts off with. And that's really important to understand, and you know, it's something we've explored at different times, and we could explore much more, but we can't right now. And that is that, you know, in a sense, whenever you have a thought, whenever your mind goes off in a particular direction, that's its own temporal order. Part of that order is that you are there and you're the one who's having the thought, but the more you get involved in the content of the thought, the more that becomes the defining shape of the order. So there's many, many, many orders. Whenever we let the mind just kind of go on its own, there are a multiplicity of orders. And we've talked about that in different ways, because it's a really important part of the TSK vision, this idea of multiple dimensionality, or here he says, multiple interconnected orders. And so now he's going to give us an example of how that works. And he gives the example of these two cones, the microcosm and the macrocosm, and the idea that we move along the surface of each cone until you reach the tip. And then in this model, he's saying, and you know, consider that tip to be the present moment. And let's say two things about that. The first thing is that when you get to that present moment, you're already pre-committed to the whole cone. You know, you're pre-committed to the whole thing. And that's what he says at the first full paragraph on page 133. That present moment is a gathering point. You know, not only the single order, but all the multiple orders gather together in this moment. That's really what it means to be here, from a certain past-centered way of looking, you could say, is that this is the place where everything comes together. You know, in this moment, which is always the present moment, all past possibilities conspire together. That's not really TSK language, but still, they come together to create this present moment. So he says, at the gathering point of the present, where all possible orders converge, known and unknown, fields of knowability, all determining limits and boundaries come together, we are at the farthest extension of what the tempo and its communicated orders project. The limits of the knowable are precisely and multiply established, and we cannot go beyond them. So, a kind of a very ordinary way of thinking about that would be a kind of deterministic view of the universe, which would simply say that what's going on at this very moment in the present is the outcome of everything that has gone on before in the present, and there is no way outside it. That's the deterministic side. You know, there's no possibility of freedom. Everything has been shaped in advance. Now, the picture that Rinpoche is presenting is much more subtle than that, and that subtlety will allow us to go further. And it's more subtle because of this idea of multiple interacting orders, so that when we arrive at the present moment, it's not that there's just one order. There's all these different orders, and he's using the simple example of microcosm and macrocosm without really saying what he has in mind with those, and we'll come back to that. But he uses that example. He wants to introduce the idea of at least two orders instead of just one, because he then goes on to make the point that each order has its own present. So that's like moving along the surface of the cone. You come to the tip, and that is the present moment, which is the gathering together of everything that is represented by that order, graphically represented by that cone. But at the same time, you're moving along another cone, and you come to the present of that moment. And so in this little diagram on page 132, you have these two points, and the diagram presents it as though it's two cones, and each one has its own tip. And so now you're at two places because you've moved along both of them. But of course, you can't be at two places. That's our understanding of the present. So the point, the gathering point of the present for each of those orders is the same as the gathering point of the other order. All the orders come together in the present, but they all represent this vast array. I don't know if it's fair to say infinite, but maybe this infinite array of orders which interact with each other to create our reality. And one reason that that's important now is that that already suggests the possibility of moving into something that's more free and more alive. Because it's not just this one driving thrust, which is the way it would be if we thought about linear time, you know, just a straight line. There are no possibilities other than to move on to the next point on the line. Here he's saying this image of the cones, and he returns to cone. He uses a lot of imagery of cones in Sacred Dimensions, you may remember. But the image of the cones shows us that there's all this interacting, multidimensional interplay. Nonetheless, in each present moment, it's you know, we don't have any choice. We're subject to this possible tempo or temporal order, we're subject to that temporal order. You add it all together, and we still have no possibility. We cannot go beyond the cone. Okay. I hope that's clear. If it's not, please say something. So the question is, or the next move to make involves kind of taking literally the image of a cone here and asking, what can we do about it? Or what is it? No, that's not really right. Asking, where does it lead us? And he says, there's a couple of possibilities, right? One possibility is that we could go outside the cone. So, you know, and so it's important here. We've got this shape, which is a cone. And clearly it's sort of set down in its own space. So you could say, well, that's only part of the temporal order. We've just, you know, if I draw a cone, it doesn't really tell me anything because it's sitting in a particular kind of space, a particular physical space. And that clearly is a part of the temporal order too. But here the image is meant to move us into a different dimension, or at least to allow for the possibility of a different dimension, because the cone is everything, you know. There are multiple cones, but each one of the cones is kind of making the claim, because it's its own temporal order, that it's the whole of everything. And so the very notion of going outside the cone, it's just kind of a hypothetical possibility, but it at least is meant to point us toward that possibility that we could go outside the cone. But he says, you know, there's really nothing we can say about that. So at the top of page 133, he says, well, if you think about something outside the cone, maybe you imagine there are other cones, and that's not so helpful. We've already seen that having multiple cones doesn't help us very much. But he says, maybe there's something outside that that's not occupied by any cone. He says, well, if there is, we have no way to relate to it. You know? He says, this is on line 4 on page 133, we seem to have no access to such temporality, for it does not arise on the basis of the dominant tempo. It's kind of by definition, you say, okay, here's a cone, here's a cone, here's a cone, each one is its own temporal order. And then you say, well, there's something outside the cone, space outside the cones. It's not in any temporal order. It's not in anything that we can connect to. And so it's just a kind of a mystery to us. It's unknown. And of course, that's going to become important because he says, well, unknown, maybe that's not so bad. Maybe now we have an option that we didn't have before. So Michael has a question. Okay. I'll just read it. You mentioned that our understanding of time means that we only have one present in which we can reside. Is knowledge like that all? Also, can our knowing self only be grounded in one order at a time? Yeah, so I think the answer to that is basically yes. The knowing self takes a position. It makes its point. You know, that's how we understand time. There is always only one possibility. My only hesitation in giving that answer is that we don't want to exclude the possibility of multiple orders, but it's kind of a theoretical, maybe I shouldn't say that, but it's kind of a theoretical possibility. That is, when we find ourselves in this present moment, we may be able to look back at lots of different temporal orders that lead us to be in this moment, or there may be other temporal orders that we don't know anything about, but they still lead us to be in this moment. So that's why you can talk about multiple orders. But from this moment in the present, if we look back, it's always just one structure, whatever direction we look in, whatever, it's as though, let's say, an infinite number of cones meet at this one point in the center. So imagine them all, the points are all pointing toward a central point. So there you are at this central point. And you could look back down any cone. You know, you could go in any direction all around this kind of infinite circle of cones. But you're always only going to be at one point. So basically the answer is yes. So we don't know anything about the possibility of being outside any temporal order, being outside any one of these cones. And that is the problem, you could say. That's the question that we want to be looking at. How can we find ourselves in a dimension that is free of any kind of order. That would be unknown time, and that's what he talks about. And he raises the question. This is the next move, you could say. He's introduced this possibility of multiple cones, and we understand now something about the fact that nonetheless they always come together at this gathering point of the present. And you could even say from this perspective, it's very different from a linear time perspective, that what it means to be in the present is to gather together all the possibilities that all the available interacting temporal orders offer us. So it's actually a very beautiful image, and I'm sure worth exploring in many ways. But we're going to move along, because he says, if we try to go outside, if we try to go beyond, there doesn't seem to be any way to do it. And then, again, he takes literally this image of the cone, and he says, well, but look, there's the inside of the cone. You know, we've only talked about moving along the surface of the cone, but every cone has an inside. And the image is kind of a simple one, you know, because, well, it's just this geometric figure of a cone. But what's really important in it is that there is something inside the cone that is not the cone. It's not part of the temporal order, and it's presupposed by the temporal order. And that's the possibility we might be able to explore. So that would allow for, if we could explore the inside, then we might arrive at a different knowledge. Right? And what he says is, as a way of describing that, he says, the projected orders, so each cone that has been projected outwards, are themselves an ongoing activity of an unknown time. So he's saying, don't look outside, look inside. And as a practical piece of advice, that's really saying, you know, you don't need to have any special kind of experience or do away with our ordinary experience. Within the temporal order, there is the unknown time that is projecting that order. And that's where we'd like to be able to look. And if we could do that, we would be arriving at different kinds of knowledge. So that's at the top of page 134, where he says, in the projecting forward of the tempo, a different knowing may be at work. Now, I do want us to have an opportunity to practice, and so therefore I'm going to cut short some of the discussion. Maybe I will include a little bit of it in the orientation for next week, and instead just move into one of our short practice opportunities to see where this might lead us. And what I want to do is work with this notion, or at least a very closely related notion, this image that he has of the macrocosm and the microcosm. So we have these two cones, and as we move along them, we find to our surprise that they lead to the same point. It looks like we're going in different directions, but in fact they lead us to the same point, which is the present, which is the gathering of all the multiple possibilities of all the different temporal orders. So what the practice I'm going to suggest is that we explore the possibility of moving simultaneously along two different cones or two different temporal orders. And microcosm and macrocosm is a good clue to that. I'm not sure in what I'm about to say, I'm not sure that it's exactly what Rinpoche has in mind with that, but it's at least closely related. So by microcosm, we could consider the ongoing mental activity, that is, our ongoing experience would be another way to say it. So right now, we are having certain kinds of experiences that are interior experiences. So another way to talk about microcosm in here would just be to say our interior experience, even though, of course, interior and exterior is pretty problematic. But for our purposes right now, our interior experiences, that's the microcosm. The macrocosm is you could say the flow of, you might think of as objective time or exterior experience. So, you know, here we are together conducting, involved in this class, and a lot of events have come together to bring us here. You know, there was, however, whatever was involved in your turning on your computer or opening your computer, whatever was involved in making the phone call, it tends to be kind of past-centered when you look at the microcosm, or rather the macrocosm. But there are all these events that come together, and they're still coming together right now. You know, and it's not exactly your sense of what's going to happen in the future or what happened in the past, that's part of it, but it's what actually did happen in the past according to our usual kind of macrocosmic, our usual objective sense of time. Same thing with what you can anticipate is going to happen. You know, you're going to have breakfast or dinner or whatever it is, depending on what time zone you're in. All of that, that's the macrocosm. The microcosm is more the internal dimension. And the practice is to see if you can inhabit both those temporal orders simultaneously. Because that's, you know, in effect, that's what he's saying is happening. You're always at the gathering point. You're always at the present of one particular order and the other particular order. And the practice is to see, can you be aware of doing that simultaneously? Now, let me say about that before we take a couple of minutes to do it, that the point is not so much succeeding in that. The point is to develop a kind of a lightness toward each of those two. So presumably you start by going back and forth, and then perhaps they begin to merge a little bit. But what matters is kind of, you know, you have to be very light-footed in order to inhabit both at the same time. And that light-footedness, you know, not committing yourself in a sense to either, committing yourself to both in a way that allows you to, it's sort of like saying, well, can you be in two places at once, with an emphasis on the at once? Because the two places are the two temporal orders, the microcosm and the macrocosm. That's the practice. I hope that's clear enough to give it a try. So let's do it for a couple of minutes, and then we'll come back and have at least a couple of minutes of discussion as well. Okay, so we'll start now. Okay. As often is the case, that's not very much time, but we're interested in first impressions here. Dzogchen Trungpa, the Tibetan teacher, wrote a book once called First Thought, Best Thought. And in Zen, they talk about beginner's mind. So whatever opened up for you. Yes, you certainly may. Aha, right. Okay. Okay. I think it's a good observation. The out, in some sense, it seems as though the out has to be in. I hope that's clear. We're kind of talking in shorthand. Okay. Right. Right, right. Yeah, I can't remember if I quoted this last week. I'd just been reading it and I thought it was a very nice expression. So if I did, excuse me for repeating myself, but this is a quote from Alan Watts. He said, if you want to know what the inside of your brain looks like, open your eyes and look around. Which is, I think, in a sense, the same point that you're making. Okay, good. Michael has a comment here. Through interest and curiosity, the individual peers into the cosmos. In forgiveness, the cosmos reaches down into the individual. Well, that's very lovely. So, and it's a good reminder that when you experience the inside and the outside, the microcosm and the macrocosm in the way we've been talking about it, it's not just a question of perception. You know, forgiveness, interest, curiosity, we have talked about those a little in past classes. And I think that's great. Let's see. I'm going to mute you again for a moment, Carolyn, because Caroline, because we were getting an echo. That's very nice. And I actually have just been thinking about forgiveness in the last couple of days, although in a rather different way, but maybe I will see if I can integrate that into the orientation for next week. Okay, Sudhi says, I'm struck by how incredibly these two world orders are influencing each other. The pressure in my head due to the cold I have influences all that I experience external to me. Yeah, absolutely. I do think, and I think it's a huge misunderstanding in our culture that there are these two realms, the external and the internal, because they really, in terms of our experience, they really all arise together. And as you say, Sudhi, the world that you experience with a cold is just not the same world that you experience when you're in the full bloom of health. Having said that, I said it's a huge mistake in our culture. It is, I think, on the philosophical level, because we're so committed to a kind of dualism. But I don't think it's a problem that's only characteristic of our culture. We do automatically subscribe to a certain kind of dualism. The dualism is kind of built in, and that's why it makes sense to talk about two different temporal orders, you know, the microcosm and the macrocosm, or these two cones. And in fact, it's important to recognize, and it's not as though it's a big mistake, it's important to recognize that we inhabit multiple orders simultaneously. We just do. It's a little bit like in science, if you say, well, you're looking at some activity that's going on in the body, and you could look at it in terms of biology, or look at it in terms of chemistry, or look at it in terms of physics, or well, let's just leave it at that. And it's not as though one of those is true and the other one is false. You know, there are many orders. So there are orders of knowledge in science. We're talking more about orders that encompass the whole of our being. But we are, in fact, being in many orders simultaneously. So that's why the practice, I think, is valuable. And I encourage you to go back to it again. Even, you know, just these little comments that we've had, I think, are very helpful. So those are good places to look in the week to come. And we will be going on with the rest of this chapter. We'll finish it. And that'll be the end of this program. It will not be the end of the time section of Dynamics. That will happen this summer. And I don't have the dates in my mind, but by next week I should be able to remind you. Okay, we'll stop there for today.